Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Our guest today is Peter Cohen, author of the book Great Demo: How to Create and Execute Stunning Software Demonstrations.
What is a great demo? A great demo presents exactly what the customer needs to see. No more, no less. That's a great demo. And to develop that out just a little bit further, if you're talking to a C-level person, that demo might be 6 minutes long. That's it. A few key dashboards, a key report, that may be all that person needs to see. If you're talking to a middle manager, that might be a 20-minute demo. Middle manager wants to see dashboards and reports, but they also need to assign actions and manage processes. So that might be a little bit longer. A great demo for the staff member might be an hour, might be 2 hours, because they're actually executing the workflows. They need to see not only what is this tool going to do to help them solve their problems, but then how am I going to use it on a day-to-day basis? So a great demo, to recap, shows exactly what is needed for that specific job title, no more, no less.
Have you ever experienced a bad software demo? More importantly, have you delivered those long, winding, mostly boring ones? Our guest today, Peter Cohen, is the founder of The Second Derivative and Great Demo. He helps software organizations achieve their sales and marketing objectives by making their demos crisp, compelling, and surprisingly effective. He has enjoyed roles in technical and product marketing, marketing management, sales and sales management, and senior management. In his most recent role prior to The Second Derivative, Peter founded a business unit in an organization and grew the business from an empty spreadsheet into a 30 million operation. Peter has experience as an individual contributor, manager, and C-level team member in marketing, sales, and business development. He has also been and continues to be a customer. Today we caught up with Peter to talk about his path-breaking book, Great Demo: How to Create and Execute Stunning Software Demonstrations. Now, onto this insightful episode with Peter Cohen. Peter, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so happy to have you here because I think the work you do is not only inspiring, but so essential.
Thank you.
It is wonderful to have you here. Welcome.
So many bad demos, so little time.
Tell us about it. So before we get into the book, why don't you tell a bit to our audience, the 3.5 people who don't know about you and what you do. Tell them about what your work is about and what you're doing currently.
So what I like to do when people ask me, what do? Is to answer back in the form of a question. Have you ever seen a bad software demonstration? And if the answer is what you're doing, which is to laugh or cry or to say something like, I probably delivered hundreds myself when I know you know why I'm in business. So the purpose of Great Demo and the Great Demo team is to take the practice of demos to a new and frighteningly delightful level. That's what we do.
How did you, I know you didn't start your life being a software demo guru. You were somewhere else, but somewhere your life led you to this. What really happened and how did you land here?
So this is funny. So there are two watershed events that took place. The first one was when I was leading a business unit. I had 100 reports or so, and we were buying CRM software. I was the head of the business units, and at that time also responsible for sales and marketing. And we're looking for CRM tools. We brought a series of vendors in to do demos. And in I think we had five vendors overall. Each asked for a couple of hours with a full team. So if you do the math, there were about eight of us that were involved. It's a lot of investment. And in each demo, the vendors would start off the beginning of the CRM system and progress linearly through the entire process. So they would start by entering records, so you progress that, they would execute marketing campaigns, and then finally, and here's the real kicker, before they got to the reporting, things like the forecast and the pipeline, which is what I as a head of sales and a head of the organization needed to see, they ran out of time. They said, trust us, our reports are terrific. So I had seen how everything works, but I never had seen what it's going to do to help me solve my business problems. And all of a sudden I had this insight and I realized, oh my goodness, we have been doing exactly the same thing to our customers. And so after, I think it was the third demo, I got the team together and I said, guys, what did you think about these demos? And they said, they were horrible, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, we're doing exactly the same thing to our prospects and customers. We need to do the last thing first. We need to take the payoff screens, the payoff deliverables, and instead of holding them to the very end where everybody's tired and the high-ranking people are gone, we need to move them right to the front of the demo so that people can see what's in it for them and where this is going. So that was instance number one, and that's where we actually began to develop the methodology and begin to practice it out. So before I go on, any observations or comments on that?
No, not at all, because I think it is so obvious, and like so many things in life, we ignore the obvious. I mean, we are so good at it, isn't that?
So this is Voltaire said it best, that common sense is far too uncommon.
Absolutely.
The second event, and how I actually wrote the book, a good friend of mine at that time was leading a software organization, and he had finally organized and secured a demo with Merck, the large pharmaceutical company. And he says, Cohan, we got to prepare for a demo for Merck. Can you take a look at what we're doing? And I said, absolutely. And I was working for another organization at the time. I was still leading this business. And preparing for my meeting with Barry, because that was his name, I drafted some notes. And then I went and saw his demo, and I gave him some feedback. It was a couple hours of discussion. When I came back from that meeting, I thought, oh, man, there's a lot of really, really good stuff, and I need to capture this. And I started writing. And I just kept writing. And that was in October of 2002. And by the end of the month, I had actually drafted the first edition of the book. And that's how it came about. It was a gush of all these ideas that had been building up in my tiny little brain over that period of that. It was about a year and a half that we'd been practicing these new ideas. And I suddenly thought, now it's time to codify them. And that's how it happened.
You started writing these notes during this process of helping your friend.
Correct, yes.
But you are sort of observing from the point of when you bought those or you're getting the demos from the CRM guys, till then, this one and a half years, it was sort of formulating in your brain. Is that how it was happening?
Well, it was both formulating in my brain, but we were also actually applying the ideas. We were trying them out. We had a team around the world. We were selling software and systems, hardware and software, and know-how patent rights at the time. And, you know, we started saying, well, what is it that this person wants out of the system? What is it this job title wants? We realized, okay, we need to parse this by job title, by job title, by job title. And the example was the CRM system, because here I was the head of sales, and what I wanted out of this was forecast and pipeline. That's what I needed. My frontline managers wanted insights into the specific deals that each of their reps were working. Mm. The reps said very simply, we just don't want something to get in the way. If we have to enter information, make it as rapid as possible. In fact, one of the first questions I had from my colleague named Kevin was, can I just dictate it into the system and it will put it in? Mm. So, and then the marketing people had their own desires, and that's when I realized that this needs to be done on a job title by job title basis. So the methodology was actually getting developed and practiced en route to actually writing the book. The writing the book came at just the right time where it had really all fallen into place. How to review a customer's situation, how to understand what is the end deliverable that particular prospect might be looking for, how to present it in a way that makes what could seem otherwise complicated to look simple, how to manage questions, and so forth. We had been practicing these ideas. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, I'm going to write a book, and I hope it's right, which I have seen happen. It was, no, here's a year and a half experience that's now codified, a year and a half of actually applying the methodology. It's codified into the book, which actually draws upon the experiences of a number of people across the organization. The organizations that will claim they have 300 years of experience. Well, we probably actually did that we were drawing from. But that's how it all came together.
How did you actually get to this 14 chapter structure? Did you write out that structure first, or did you start writing the concepts and the content?
So the structure was pretty much in my mind. I had been working on it as we had been practicing these ideas and tuning them up. I've been making mental notes and physical notes as we went along. The book itself is structured like a great demo. The people that read it through to about chapter 8, well, so it's pretty funny. Occasionally somebody will actually email me and say, oh, I get it. you actually practice what you preach. Yeah, the book starts off, it's the first page offers the payoff. And the idea of, introduce the deliverable for the end result right up in front, and then begin to peel back the layers in accord with the customer's depth and level of interest. This is the way the book was drafted, and the structure was pretty much already in my mind. I had certain key ideas that we want to communicate. So reviewing the customer's situation, understanding what the end deliverables are, presenting those in deliverables. By the way, those are two very separate things. I'll give you an example. How many times have you seen somebody present a software screen and they say, so isn't that terrific? And our eyes are going around trying to figure out, what am I looking at here? What I'll often tell people in workshops is, on the vendor side, I'll say, so how many times have you seen that screen? And they'll say hundreds. And I'll ask them, well, how many times has your prospect seen it? And they'll say, well, this is the first time. My comment then is, don't assume they get it. Don't assume they understand what they're looking at. You've got to take their eyes to exactly what you want them to see. And if you're face-to-face, that's a matter of physical pointing. Okay. If you're over the web, that's a matter of using the tools in Zoom or Skype or whatsoever to annotate or draw their attention to it, and communicate what they're seeing, how it's going to help solve their business problems, and the business value associated with making the change. So it was elements like that I already had in my mind, we've been practicing, that I just needed to codify. So things like fewest number of clicks, peeling back the layers, how to manage and park questions. These were all things that we had been practicing and developed. So it was a bit of a gush.
That's great. And that's rare, by the way. I know of novelists going away for a month and coming back with a novel, but I don't know of many books of this nature being done in this manner.
Well, I can share with you that the second edition was nothing like that. The second edition was nothing but work. I could caution authors that when you draft your first edition, think in terms of it being published literally right now, and then how will the world have changed in 2 years? Because in my case, I had included all in the first edition all kinds of appendices and information that was then current, tools that were available, technologies and so forth. And literally, the moment it was actually published, it was already out of date. And so the second edition, which included a lot of new content and updated content, but to a large degree, it was actually overhauling the first edition in some cases to remove things that would age it over
past. Absolutely.
So there you go.
Absolutely. So, and of course, now you're in an era where you can have the appendices online and you can continue to update them. It's much easier to manage this kind of associated information today than it was. I mean, theoretically, it was still possible in 2002, but I guess it was very early days to implement something like that. So let's get to the core of your book. What is a great demo?
What is a great demo? A great demo presents exactly what the customer needs to see. No more, no less. That's a great demo. And to develop that out just a little bit further, if you're talking to a C-level person, that demo might be 6 minutes long. That's it. A few key dashboards, a key report, that may be all that person needs to see. If you're talking to a middle manager, that might be a 20-minute demo. Middle manager wants to see dashboards and reports, but they also need to assign actions and manage processes. So that might be a little bit longer. A great demo for the staff member might be an hour, might be 2 hours, because they're actually executing the workflows. They need to see not only what is this tool going to do to help them solve their problems, but then how am I going to use it on a day-to-day basis? So a great demo, to recap, shows exactly what is needed for that specific job title, no more, no less.
Which also means that somebody who is focused on giving a great demo theoretically cannot give demos to multiple levels in the same session.
So yes, you can. It's a matter of organizing and managing the meeting. So if we had those three job titles or three levels, we've got execs, middle managers, and staffers, and they're all in the same room, that's fine. You set expectations via an agenda that says, we're going to deal with our executives first, then the middle managers, and then we're going to go on to staffers. And by the way, if there's a system administrator in the room, we'll deal with his or her questions at the end. So that you chunk things up, you break things up into consumable components, in this case, initially mapped to job title, as you go through that process. So you can actually manage those situations.
And I would presume that demos fail because they don't do this.
So demos fail for 100 reasons. most people tend to focus initially on technology. Frankly, that's not the reason that demos fail. People are willing to forgive blemishes and bugs they expected in software. Where demos fail, first and foremost, is through a lack of discovery. Lack of discovery. If you were a doctor and a patient comes into your office and you offer a prescription without ever examining the patient and coming to a diagnostic conclusion, that in the world of medicine has a name. It's called malpractice. And I would suggest the same thing is true in the world of software demos. If you have a CRM system is the perfect example. If you present that same end-to-end demo of a CRM system to every job title, that's software business malpractice. You're basically, it's the equivalent of telling your customer to go down to the pharmacy and try one of every pill that's on the shelf and then report back what appeared to work. So discovery is the essence. And one of the things we teach in Great Demo Workshops and what is laid out in the book is not just discovery to ask a pile of questions, but discovery with a purpose, a structure to enable you to understand and capture and thus react to and address the key elements of information that you need as a vendor to put together and deliver a credible demo. And equally, that your prospect needs to have been asked so that they feel that you are able to put together and deliver a successful demo to them. Interestingly enough, prospects want to be discovered. Let me say that again, but slightly differently. Earnest prospects, prospects who are actually interested in solving their business problems, want to be discovered. And that's a principle that I think many software organizations don't understand or are afraid of. So number one issue is insufficient discovery for demos. And we could talk a little bit about vision generation demos versus technical proof, because there are many, many people in organizations who really only visualize a single type of demo. Let me show you the demo, or even worse, let me show you the deep dive demo. And there's a purpose for at least two, in fact, today, three different types of demos that that should be understood.
Yeah. So would you like to go into that?
Sure. Let's talk about vision generation versus technical proof. Vision generation demos, very simply, let's draw an analogy. If you go into a restaurant and you sit down at the table and the waiter comes over to you and never offers you a menu and never asks you what you're interested in and simply guesses. So he goes into the kitchen, he comes out, he brings you a beautiful steak, and you say, great, but I'm a vegetarian. So whoosh, he takes it away. And now he brings out this beautiful vegetarian dish, and you say, but great, I'm not a fan of okra. Repeat 100 times. That is a traditional overview demo. Mm. Stop me if you see anything that looks interesting. Mm-hmm. So the challenge with the traditional overview demo is that it's way too much. And if we go back to our restaurant analogy, if the waiter was able to come out and offer you just a sample, just an appetizer for you to say, okay, yeah, that's really interesting. Do you have anything more like that? That's what a vision generation demo is. And the fundamental structure is very simple. It's, let me share with you, says the vendor, how we've helped other customers that might be in similar situations to you. And you actually review an example situation and you ask the question, how does this compare? Customer says, well, it's quite similar. And you talk for a few minutes, literally a few minutes. And then the vendor says, well, I have a lot more questions, but would you like an example or two, an appetizer of how some of our other customers have been applying our tools to solve the problems? Customer says, or prospect says, yes, please. You share one or two or three key screens that map to the deliverables for those scenarios. Describe what the prospect is seeing. Talk about the problems that it solves and the value that is enjoyed by other customers. You ask, is that the kind of thing that you have in mind or might look interesting? Prospect says, yeah, it looks very interesting. You say, terrific. Now let's go into effectively a discovery conversation so we can then put together a demo that actually maps to your specific situation. So vision generation, people should think of a vision generation demo as perhaps literally 6 minutes, 4 to 6 minutes of actual demo discussion. The whole rest of it is actually a method of moving comfortably and mutually into a discovery conversation. So vision generation is one of the elements that's missing from most software organizations' practices, most vendors' practices. They'll either offer the overview, which in many cases is 30 minutes to an hour, or I've heard software companies say, well, we couldn't possibly deliver a demo in less than 2 hours. So you're going back to the doctor analogy, if you will, of way too much, or the restaurant analogy of, here, let me just put plate after plate in front of you and see if anything looks interesting. So vision generation is designed to enable two things to take place. Number one, to satisfy the prospect's desire to get a sense of what is possible, the art of the possible. And number two, then, to move both parties comfortably into a discovery conversation. Hmm. So let me pause there and ask this, does that all resonate?
Absolutely. In fact, while you were describing this, one of the biggest issues that I think the selling process itself is challenged with is that people do not understand how to do discovery. Not only in context of a demo, but just pure and simple discovery, people have no clue how to go about doing it. People are so enamored by the idea of a checklist or enamored by the idea of a fixed format, and this whole idea that I need to drive everybody through this format, that the agility that is required to do a proper discovery goes out of the window somewhere. And we do this fallback into the overview demo, which is, well, I've covered all the bases, so take your pick and figure it out whether it works for you or not.
So I'm in violent agreement. We're going to say organizations typically either look at discovery through the lens of BANT, B-A-N-T,
yeah.
You know, which is not discovery. It's pure qualification, and it's not even qualification that is beneficial for the prospect. It's all about managing the vendor's resources, time. Discovery is a conversation, and there should be quid pro quo for both parties. There should be value in it for both parties. So whereas you as the vendor need to gather a sufficient amount of information, and you should know where you're going, you should be able to say, okay, we have completed discovery. By the way, that's a huge statement. We have completed discovery. People will always say, and I'm in agreement, that discovery is ongoing. It's evergreen. You never stop. But for the purposes of preparing for the next phase of the buying process or selling process for a, for example, technical proof demo, you need to have completed discovery. So to understand what that is, you do need to know where you're going. We teach a methodology for doing discovery. We've identified 7 levels of discovery skills, ranging from simple expressions of the customer saying, I have a problem, all the way to a rich interlocking methodology, which is what we effectively teach. Discovery is the key, absolutely.
And I think the other point that you made, which is so vital, earnest prospect, which means one who is really looking at a solution now, will come through by the single qualifier that is open to discovery.
Absolutely. In fact, so when I'm doing an initial, let's talk about this. So prospect reaches out to me and says, hey, I'm interested in demo skills training for my team, via email, for example, or via our website. And I type back and say, terrific, let's set a time for a conversation, discuss what you have in mind. So we do that. I set up a 30-minute call. And during that 30-minute call, typically there is an exchange of information. They're interested in what are the offerings. They want to know about pricing. I always send them pricing immediately after, fully transparent. Mm. And there's some give and take. I say begin to talk a little bit about discovery questions. Tell me about your team, how many, where are they located, and so forth. When we get to about the 20 to 25-minute mark on that first call, I say, so I have a pile more questions that I really need to ask. However, it's really up to you. I could, at this point, just send you the information I promised, the pricing information, example workshop, some other information, and we can just go from there. Or if this sounds interesting, let's set a second call to go through the balance of my questions and answer questions from you as well. That's a terrific dividing point. So if they say, let's look at our calendars and set another time, I know I have a real earnest prospect, somebody who wants to solve their problem and is now seeing this as part of that pathway to getting to that solution. If, on the other hand, they say, no, just send me the information, I'm good with that too. That means they are not yet either in an active buying process or they don't see us as an appropriate vendor. Fine, either way, we add them to the nurture or trickle marketing list until such time as they're ready to raise their hand and say, yep, now we're ready. And by the way, I have to share with you, I've been in business long enough doing this business that I've actually had people send me responses to messages that they had kept for over 7 years. saying, okay, now it's time.
It makes complete sense, right? I mean, I can understand totally that somebody has, for example, somebody introduced you to someone else and said, hey, we had a great experience with him, or I read his book, and so on and so forth. And why didn't you reach out? So, okay, it's very easy to reach out today. Just go and leave a message on your website or send you a mail and so on. It's very easy to just have what we call academic interest. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an academic interest in what Peter is doing, and sounds like interesting thing. Doesn't mean I'm ready to buy or I have a need right at this moment.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break,
instead of trying to sell to somebody, my job, I perceive it as to help them buy. That's my job. So anything I can do to make the prospect's job easier, to anticipate their needs, to provide them with information, and not hound them.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
So I'm a big fan of what is now being called buyer enablement, which is really the simple concept of, instead of trying to sell to somebody, my job, I perceive it as to help them buy. That's my job. So anything I can do to make the prospect's job easier, to anticipate their needs, to provide them with information, and not hound them. Are you ready to buy? Are you ready to buy? Are you ready to buy? It's the end of the quarter. I'll offer you a discount. Yeah. No, my job is to enable them to buy on their schedule, on their timing, as comfortably as possible. And so if it takes 7 years, so be it. On the other hand, I've also had prospects that I just had this happen 3 weeks ago. Somebody moved from another company who was a great demo house, if you will, to a new company, took a look at the team's demos, contacted me and said, we're bringing you in. Yeah. And the next thing, we have a PO. That was the buying process. And so now, interestingly enough, now we're going through the discovery conversations, which still need to be done.
Of course.
The sales cycle from my perspective could be as short as a few days or as long as several years. The buying process from the prospect side, however, is what really matters. And that's what we try to focus on.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even want to talk about what I do, but I'm so much in alignment with what you're talking. Let's move to the technical demo bit. So we covered the vision, which sort of encompasses the discovery process. Mm-hmm. What is the technical demo according to you?
Yeah, the technical proof demo is, number one, it's understanding and making sure you understand exactly the customer's situation. So what overarching business problems are they looking to solve? What specific problems are they facing that's keeping them to achieve those goals or objectives? What specific capabilities they're looking for out of the software, the value, the timing, and a few other things. But it's that middle bit, the specific capabilities they're looking for, that is one of the key elements of discovery. And therefore, once you understand which capabilities they need to see, what deliverables they're looking for out of your offering, that's when you put together a technical proof demo. And the technical proof demos are designed, again, you're focusing on an individual job title, their situation. You then show the end deliverables they are looking for, that person is looking for. So, for example, in the CRM system, if it was me as the head of sales, I want to see the pipeline and forecast reports. That's what I want to see. And I might want to be able to drill down and explore them to some degree. But fundamentally, I just want to know where is the business right now and what can I expect as we look out two or three or four quarters. Mm. So number one, reviewing the situation to make sure that things haven't changed and you understood it correctly. Number two, you're presenting those end deliverables right up front and confirming that this is what your prospect wants to see and is interested in. Number three, if the prospect would like to see how you actually get to those, that's where you go into the live software and you, and I love to ask people to do this. They say, put your hand up like this with your thumb outstretched and say the following words, fewest number of clicks. So let's do it together. Ready? Fewest number of clicks. And what we're trying to help people understand is that prospects as users want to accomplish what they need to do in the software without any additional effort. Every click you add, every if statement or option that you share is taking the simple and making it look complicated. So we teach the opposite, fewest number of clicks to execute any particular pathway. Customer says, wow, that looked really easy. They look thoughtful. They begin to ask questions. Can it do this? Can it do this other thing? How do I set this up? That's the next section where you are literally peeling back the layers, but in a two-way bidirectional conversation with the prospect. So the delightful thing about this is it is a conversation. Customer is basically taking you and them as deep as they have interest. And I love to use newspapers and news presented. You remember newspapers? and news presented on the web as an analogy. Because if you look at any news article in a newspaper or on the web, it follows what journalists call inverted pyramid structure, which means you put the most important stuff right at the top, the headline. And then the first paragraph is the crisp summary. That's like the first pass through software. And then as readers, we read as deep as we have interest. And when we get to that level of detail that's no longer interesting, we move to the next article. And that's the way we teach people to structure demos. Let the customer indicate how deep they want to go, as opposed to, hey, let me show you another way of doing that same thing and how you set that up. And if and or, and if and or, and if and or. So that's one of the key ideas. Fewest number of clicks, and let the customer determine, let the prospect determine how deep they want to go. So that's technical proof, and it's exactly that. It's to enable the customer to say, okay, I've seen what I need to see. It does what it needs to do. I am comfortable to move forward. By the way, this is a subtle, like an anvil concept. A well-executed technical proof demo can avoid, in fact, often avoids, the requirement on the prospect side for a proof of concept. Hmm. And I cannot tell you how many vendors in the initial conversation with a prospect will say, and we'd love to offer you a proof of concept. And what they've just done is they've just basically taken what could have been a crisp sales and buying cycle and turned it into something that is weeks longer.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree.
So that's technical proof. Yeah. So the hierarchy effectively is vision generation, discovery, technical proof.
Right. So I will jump to the towards the end of the book and we'll try and bring this home. You wrote a chapter on remote demonstration. How does the remote demonstration differ or doesn't from all that we discussed now?
So it's all about driving interactivity. And when people are and return to demoing face-to-face, some of the same principles actually apply. But let's talk specifically about remote demos or virtual demos. And 99% of virtual demos begin with the phrase, can you see my screen?
Yes.
But followed by the phrase, and please stop me if you have any questions. We want to make this interactive. Mm. But the reality is, and here's the scary thing, because of the way that traditional demos are constructed, what's often going through the vendor's mind, the person that's doing the demo, is please don't ask me any questions because I won't be able to get through all the content that I need to squeeze into this hour.
Right.
And the end result is talk, 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 click, 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 talk and click, talk and click. And then after 8 or 10 minutes, you hear, so are there any questions so far? And what do you typically hear from the audience at that point?
Nothing.
Crickets in an empty room, or nope, we're good.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They go on again for another 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Remote demos, virtual demos, suffer badly from a lack of interactivity.
Yeah.
And what we teach in Great Demo Methodology, the book outlines, but you've actually got to practice it, is how to drive interactivity right from the very beginning. So through little subtle small things, like as opposed to can you see my screen, we suggest take your mouse, move it to the upper left-hand corner of your screen and ask, can you see my mouse in the upper left-hand corner? Prospect says, yes, I can. You move your mouse down to the bottom right corner, ask again, can you see my mouse down to the bottom? Yep, see it there. How's the sound of my voice? Sounds pretty good. What you're doing here at the very beginning is you're beginning to train your customer in a call and response mode. Hmm. And as you go through your demo, as opposed to talking for 8 or 10 or God help you longer minutes and then asking any questions so far and they wake up, oh my God, they asked me something. Instead, think in terms of every 76 seconds on average, every 76 seconds, there should be a switch in speakers between you, the vendor, and a question or comment from your prospect. And so you have to give them the opportunity to ask questions. By the way, subtlety. Number one, when somebody asks, does that make sense? This is a pet peeve for many people today. There really is only one answer. So when the vendor asks, does that make sense? The prospect's thinking, well, if I say no, I'm going to look like an idiot. So the prospect says, yes. But they may or may not meet it, if you will. When the vendor asks, so any questions so far, that also presupposes that that's the only possible form of response. So what I try to teach people to say or to ask as they break after a chunk or segment is they do a summary and then they ask questions, comments, observations, for example. So open it up more broadly. That way, somebody could ask a question, but they could also say, oh, yeah, you know, that looks much better than what we're doing today. Great. That's the kind of feedback I'd love to hear. Similarly, what's your impression of what we just showed you? So ask a question that actually drives a response. Think in terms of, on average, every minute and quarter, 76 seconds, there should be a speaker switch between the vendor and the prospect. So let me pause and ask, I mean, we could do an hour-long session just on driving interactivity over the web.
Right. And the other question I have is, does it help if there are two people on the vendor side giving the demo and they switch between themselves?
So that helps, but it actually can also be dangerous.
Yeah.
Because how many times have you ever heard a salesperson pile on? And by that, I mean the pre-sales person is doing the demo. They say blah, 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 blah. And they think they've communicated what needed to be communicated. And then the salesperson jumps on and says, so da, 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 da. And then in many cases, you'll actually have that repeat once or twice.
Yeah.
Customer, prospect has said nothing that whole time. So it can help, but you need to be cognizant again. I think this rubric of every 76 seconds on average, again, it's not just every 76 seconds, but on average, that the prospect side of the equation needs to offer something. That's what we need to keep in mind. I will sometimes teach people to do just very subtle things to test the latency, for example. You're 25 minutes into a demo. You haven't really heard anything for a few minutes from your prospect. You do a summary, and then you could say, you know what? I'm not sure that we might be suffering some lag here. I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, click, and then I'm going to click to get to the next screen. Please let me know when you see it. So 3, 2, 1, click. Prospect says, oh, okay, we see it now. What you've done is gently force them to re-engage in a, just a very gentle way. In a very gentle way. Yeah. So that's one way of solving that.
Sure.
But very, very pragmatically, it's break things up into small chunks and then offer periodic summaries. So what we just showed you was da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, questions, comments, thoughts on what you just saw.
Yeah.
And then offer the pause.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the single most useful tools operating over the web is a webcam.
Yeah.
And when prospects join a meeting and their webcams are off, I gently but firmly ask them to turn them on. And I will often offer that if this was a face-to-face meeting, you wouldn't walk into a conference room with a bag over your head.
Right.
No.
Absolutely.
Let's meet one another just as if we would person to person. That's part of the communication.
Yeah.
So you can read body language, you can see if they're paying attention and so forth.
Yeah.
I'll add to this, I did an article called The Zoom Scan about a year ago now. And the Zoom Scan, what I'm referring to, when you're face-to-face doing a demo in the front of the room, we scan the audience for comprehension, for wakefulness, for questions that are appearing on somebody's forehead. So we're using a part of our mental bandwidth to track and assess what's going on in that face-to-face room. Over Zoom or whatever tool we're using, we need to translate that same scan to what is in front of us on our computer screen. So, for example, scanning the webcams, scanning what you're showing, making sure there's not something in chat or Q&A, using the annotation tools. This is part of the scan that we need to actually apply when we're operating over the web. So those are a few tips, at least, for virtual and remote demos.
Great. So do you find any way to do the discovery in an asynchronous manner, and is that effective?
Yes, and sometimes.
Yeah.
I can tell you what is not effective, and in fact is annoying to the prospect, and that's to send them a detailed questionnaire.
Mm.
Now, caveat, if a prospect has actually sent out an RFP, that is the detailed questionnaire, if you will, in reverse. So let's take that off the table for now, if you will.
Yes.
But sending a prospect a questionnaire of questions that you should be asking in a conversational manner, that's unacceptable. However, tools like Consensus, and there's some other tools that are appearing as well, to provide the opportunity for the prospect to actually choose their own adventure, if you will, provide the prospect with value. They're getting vision generation demos is what they're seeing. The vendor at the same time is gaining very, very valuable information on which job titles, what did those job titles look at, what did they rank as important or less important or not important at all, how long did they watch a segment, did they watch them all the way through, did they watch them again, did they forward this on to somebody else that might be another member of the buying committee. This is how you can begin to enable discovery to take place in an automated fashion. It does not replace the conversation, particularly for complex, high-value offerings, but it certainly starts a conversation, and it moves the process forward for both parties, the vendor and the prospect. Big fan of these tools, by the way.
Peter, that was great, and I think it's just the beginning of a scenario where there'll be more softwares and there'll be more terrible demos, and people will have to adjust to what is the right path. Having said that, this may not be the only path, but this is definitely one of the paths to get it right.
Absolutely. I'll comment two things to help wrap up. Number one, great demo methodology is not incremental change. It's not small tips to make your demos incrementally better. It actually represents a step change in a different way of doing things from traditional. And that means for some people, some significant unlearning and the relearning. It's very frankly, it's like the step change between a society that's based on horse transportation versus moving to the automobile or from automobile to airplanes. You're still getting going from place A to B, but it's a different way of executing those processes. So that's something to contemplate. It does require some, and I hate to say this, thinking. But here's the second thing, and it's hugely important. The organization called Gong.io, did a study a few years ago where initially they reviewed 67,149 recorded demos done over the web and uncovered key success factors that 100% validated great demo methodology. In fact, I did not know this study was underway until it was published. In the study, they actually said in their report, Peter Cohen, in his book, Great Demo Was Right, Do the Last Thing First. They validated the do the last thing first. They validated doing discovery. What a shock. They validated making it a conversation. They validated breaking things up into chunks. They validated inverted pyramid. It's a validated methodology. So it's one thing to know in your heart that a way of doing things is better. It's quite something entirely different and refreshing to have it validated by what was at the time 67,000 data points and is now upwards of 3 million. So there you go.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Wonderful. That's a great place to conclude this session. And I have a sense that we will be having a few more in the days coming.
I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Peter.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books with Julie Hansen, Andrea Walds, Amit Agarwal, Fred Kopstek, and Mike Kunkel about wonderful books they have written. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.